Okay. This is Marianne Arrington. Today is June 28th, 1999. We are at my home in Bowling Green, Kentucky, and I am with Noi. And what is your last name?
Bori Boone. Bori Boone.
Can you spell that?
Yeah, it's B-O-R-I-B-O-U-N-E.
B-O-R-I-B-O-U-N-E. Bori Boone. And Noi is N-O-Y.
Mm-hmm.
Noi came to the United States from
Laos,
and she's going to tell us a little bit about how she ended up here, or how your family immigrated mm-hmm. from Laos, and what year, I mean, about what year was it?
Okay. It was, we got here in 1980.
Okay.
We got to the U.S. in 1980, but we had spent from 1976 to 1980 in a refugee camp in Thailand. So we spent some time there.
How old were you in 1980? What's your birthday?
I was born in December, so I came here at 5 and a half. So I turned December that following year. We came in April, so I turned 6.
So you were born in 75?
4.
74.
Mm-hmm.
December 74, okay. Okay, so, initially your family lived in Laos.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us about the political situation and stuff?
The Vietnam War was just about ready to end. I think it didn't quite end until like 1975, 76. I think that's roughly right. But it was a communist state, and I believe that it still is a communist state. The people haven't had their independence yet.
Mm-hmm.
During that time, since the war was going on with the U.S. and Vietnam, Laos sort of got entangled in the middle because U.S. troops were coming over to Laos to use the land to cross over. So all that was going on, and the communist state, and my parents just didn't really have a choice because my aunt had gone to Thailand through a visa to stay in Thailand for a little while just to do some work and things like that. And once it ran out, she just didn't want to go back to Laos because the situation over there was a little bit too rough.
Mm-hmm.
But the only thing that separates Laos and Thailand is that river, the Mekong River. And so there's no other, you can't just cross over from land to land. You have to go across a river that might stretch half a mile to a mile, depending on where you're at. And so, once my aunt's visa ran out, I'm not quite sure, I get sort of messed up on the story, but the government in Thailand, since she didn't want to come back, had either given her the choice to go back to Laos or she didn't have anywhere to stay, so she went to a refugee camp. And then
in Thailand.
Okay. So she had to go to a refugee camp in Thailand. And at that time, there was a lot of refugee camps because there was a lot of people fleeing from Cambodia and Laos. And so my aunt went there. And so in order for anybody to be with her, my dad and my mom had to make the decision to do the same thing and go over there and be in a refugee camp. That was the beginning of, no, the middle of 1976, because my brother was just born in that March. And I was born in 74, and my brother was born in the beginning of 76. And
so you were about 13 months apart?
Yeah, about roughly 13, okay. 14 months apart. And then, so my dad, what he did for a living was he was a fisherman and a farmer. Because the whole family had some land on a village and stuff like that. And so it wasn't, they always had border patrol too,
mm-hmm.
in certain sectors of the river. So it wasn't really, my dad wasn't an unfamiliar face
mm-hmm.
on the river because he was a fisherman. So my brother was about 3 months old. My brother was roughly about 3 months old, and my parents had to literally escape And so in order for them to do it, since my dad didn't have a boat, they had put my brother and I underneath some blankets, and so the only visible people on that boat were my parents. And so the guards, you know, would ask, like, what are you doing? And my dad had a logical excuse that he was night fishing, and it wasn't unusual. And so he just went up the river and just crossed in an area in Thailand. And from there, you just, I don't know how they got to the refugee camp. I guess we just walked right into it. It's a little bit like what Kosovo's going through mm-hmm. right now, and how they just go to the refugee camps. And it was exactly like that. Refugee camps, they have tents set up, and they don't have enough food, and so you just have to get what you can. When the trucks come around, that they pass out food. I remember that, though, that we had to share a small tent with, like, other families and stuff like that. And from there, we stayed there for a while, a long time. And what had happened was missionaries would come, you know, and talk about wherever they were from, if we would even be interested in going to those remote areas and stuff. And what would happen?
Like, what do you mean? Missionaries from where?
Missionaries from, like, all over the world. Mm-hmm. Like, they had a lot of missionaries that came from the U.S., mm-hmm. and they had some from South America, and they had a bunch from Europe, and a lot of people got scattered. What happened was they had to have a particular family sponsor you,
right,
in order to come. And so a lot of these sponsorships came through missionary work in churches. Mm. And so they'd send people to see if, basically recruit.
Mm-hmm.
Recruit to see if anybody wanted to go to a certain area or just wanted to leave.
But when you say to certain remote areas, you mean just areas all over the world?
Yeah, just areas all over the world, really.
Christian missionaries.
Yeah, Christian missionaries, pretty much, if from what I remember. They did that, and then they would recruit and see if there was a family, and then somebody would come and say, okay, we have a family who wants to sponsor your family. Do you want to go? And that's how it was. But there were so many refugees, and a lot of people didn't want to go to a different place because they were hoping that maybe they could just stay or go home, you know. And so, and a lot of people who stayed in that particular camp for so long a time, what they do is they usually ship them to the Philippines. They usually shipped a bunch of them to the Philippines because they had more room. Mm-hmm. And then more refugees would come to that certain camp. But I never heard anything after that about the Philippine refugee camp. But we had a family. We had a missionary that came and made the announcement, you know, that we have so many families that can sponsor you. Mm-hmm. We can take so many families. And so my dad had decided that it was best for us to go. And this was hard because this was all we had, too. Everything we had was just everything we had in our hands. And so my dad decided that, you know, we should leave because there was nothing that could benefit them there anymore.
You mean leave Thailand and leave behind Laos and not hope to go home, but yeah.
Just leave and hopefully, yeah, and go somewhere new, and hopefully that one day that they could just go back and visit, and they have since then.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were really expected to go to Europe or South America. We didn't expect to come to the U.S. We really didn't, and it didn't matter to my family. It really didn't matter where we were going to go as long as we weren't there at the time. And so my dad had just said yes. And to any one of the three, and the U.S. wasn't even on the list, because I think a lot of people wanted to come to the U.S., but it was more like a waiting list to come to the U.S. than any other place.
Mm-hmm.
And so his first priority was just to get out.
Mm-hmm. To someplace safe.
Yeah, because we had spent almost four years in a refugee camp. And so I think my dad just had enough. And so a church in Chesterton, Indiana, had a family who wanted to sponsor our family, or sponsor a family. And so we did all the procedures and paperwork, and we came here in 1980.
What kind of procedures and paperwork?
There was a procedures and paperwork. There was a lot of things that had to be changed. For example, my aunt, the people that came over here was my father, my mother, myself, my brother, and my aunt, my mom's sister.
Okay.
But in order for her to come with us, my dad had to say that he was her brother.
Okay.
He couldn't say that's my sister-in-law. He had to say that she was a part of his family.
Instead of your mother's family.
Right.
It had to be a part of your father's family.
Okay. I had to do that. And plus, everybody in our family had only a first and last name. But on papers, they wanted you to have a first, middle, and last name. So everything got added. There was an extra name got added. Like, for example, my real first name is Isan. And my middle name, my play name, which my parents gave me, my first name, is Noy. And I didn't get that until I was 5 when I did all the paperwork.
So, okay, say that again. Your first name is what?
Isan.
And your...
The play name that I have is Noy.
Play name, what do you mean by that?
Since we only had a first and a last name, we never had the first, middle, last.
Uh-huh.
But the paperwork that we had to have a first, middle, and a last name.
Uh-huh.
So my parents...
They made up.
They made up, even though Noy is it's a popular name, like Jennifer.
Okay.
Christine. They just threw me, gave me a name, and it was like Noy, Isan Boyer. And even though my first name is my middle name, that's, I guess.
Yeah,
I see, right? So we did those paperwork, and we did, that was really all this, a bunch of numbers. It's just like a bunch of numbers, medical checkup, stuff like that. We did have to do all that. It was just a lot of paperwork just to make sure that we were going to be legal,
mm-hmm.
and not coming over here illegally. Taking pictures there and
mm-hmm.
before and after and stuff like
mm-hmm.
that. And so we finally got here in 1980. We came in April, the middle of April. And we landed in California. And at that time, I think that there had been snow. In 1980, in April, if I recall it, there was snow on the ground. The trees were still dead from winter. And my parents were just amazed because you go from 80, 90, even 100 degree weather all year round in a monsoon season where it just rains
mm-hmm.
to having snow and cold and heat.
That was California.
Because
normally it doesn't snow in California.
Mm-hmm. I think maybe it was just cold in California. I think my parents were talking about that we saw snow when we got to Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
That I think that's Chicago. So mm-hmm. when we went from California to Chicago. And
did you stay any amount of time in California?
We stayed there for 3 weeks for in processing.
3 weeks?
Yeah. 3 weeks we had to, I don't remember.
What did they do?
3 weeks, they put a whole bunch of different families into a hotel, sort of.
Mm-hmm.
It's more like a room, a hotel, and then they just wait for all the paperwork, like day after day, fingerprints, taking pictures, numbers. It was just a whole ordeal of paperwork. And I think if it was just our family doing paperwork, it'd probably just take a couple hours.
Mm-hmm.
But they had like so many people coming over at one time.
Mm-hmm.
And so once we got there, they put us on a plane again, and then we went to O'Hare
mm-hmm.
Airport. And then from there, we met with the family that was going to sponsor us. They were very nice. His name was Bob Wall. And he was a part of an elderly council on church, Liberty Bible Church, which is a non-denominational church.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very nice and generous to our family. They had owned a house that was right next to the church
mm-hmm.
that was really for missionaries, but they put our family there and let us live there for a long time. And then they had another house on that property and let us move into that house and leave that smaller house for the missionaries
mm-hmm.
to live in. So my dad worked at the church as a maintenance man, and my mother worked there too. She only worked there for about 8 years, and then 8 years, and my father still works there now, so it's been a long time.
It's been almost 20 years.
Yeah, so it's only almost been 20 years. And we had a big ordeal about religion. We did, because you go from being Buddhist to want to change to Christianity. That's a big flip-flop. And so I think it was a lot harder on my parents than it ever was on my brother and myself, because during that younger years in my life, even though I knew certain aspects about the religion and things like that, it was a lot harder for my parents, because that's all they have ever known. And going from there to here and having to not really convert, it was by choice that they converted. But I think that there's a lot of misconception about religion and culture. I think a lot of people have to understand that that culture is created by religion. And even though we do things that might reflect on the Buddhist religion, it's not that, because culture is a part of religion. It's not that we didn't want to break the religion or follow the religion, but that was instilled in culture. Because in Laos, probably, I think probably 99% of the population was probably Buddhist. I don't know what it is now. I'm sure some of it's, the numbers have changed, but I mean, that's all my parents ever knew, and that's all their parents ever knew, and so forth. And so for my brother and I, it was a transition, but it wasn't, not so much like my parents. My parents, it took them 12 years to really convert. And I don't know if it's really converted all the way. Because sometimes I can't tell between the difference in religion and culture. I just have to understand that that's the way it was. And our culture derived on Buddhism. And that's the only part I really can't really distinguish. I can, but I can't, you know?
Do they have things around their home still? Like,
They used to have like Buddhist statues and stuff, but they don't have them anymore. Because if you had a sculpture of like Buddha, you can have candles around it and have your own little worship place in the home, but they don't have that anymore.
But they did for a while.
Yeah, they did
in Indiana.
Yeah, they did when we first came to America. They did, and since we lived close to Chicago, there was a lot of. The population was higher too, of immigrants from the same area, and so they had a Buddhist temple and stuff like that they'd go worship once a month. But I think a lot of pressure came. My mother doesn't work at the church anymore; it's just my father. And I think a lot of pressure came from the church to try to convert my parents, and so I think my father felt like it was more of an obligation to switch than it was by own free will. So we all got baptized in, I think, 92.
So, in other words, your father felt a lot of pressure because these very nice people had, really helped them.
Helped him and gave him a job and a place to live. And I think he feels more obligation than anything. And I think he feels so much like he's the little man, because he knows, but he spoken English is pretty good, but he feels like I don't know if he feels like he can't do anything else but work there, because he's put so much time in there that he can't get what the benefits that he's getting now somewhere else. And granted, the people have been nice to him. Bob Wall, the man in his family that had sponsored us, he had moved on and left the church. So he left the
area.
Yeah, the area. And he had retired and then moved on. And he keeps in contact with my parents once in a while. But he had helped and support my parents a lot in trying to do things the right way. And I think a church has changed so much too. They got a new elderly board, sort of not being fair to my father in some cases. Like, for example, they had, even though we were living in a house that the church had owned, and my father had just rented it pretty much, and then they brought in a new man to replace my mother because she had some back problems. So they sort of gave him more pay, even though my father had been there 11 years before him. So that was sort of unfair, but I don't know if my father feels really inferior to say anything, stand up and say something. So, but
well, I'm sure the language has a lot to do with it.
Yeah, the language has a lot to do with it. I think my father just feels like he's just
maybe like he doesn't have very many options.
Yes, that too, and he doesn't have very many options because he can't. He's 50. No, he's 48. He's 48. He just turned 48, so he just feels like he just needs to stick it in there for a little bit longer and then just retire from that.
Mm-hmm.
I know that sounds like he can do other things. I know that, but I don't think he understands that he can do other things. And also, there comes an obligation too that he needs to just stick it because they're the people who have helped him and his family come over here, things like that. Now, growing up, it was hard, I gotta say, for myself, and I think it was hard on my brother, too.
Mm-hmm.
My parents, the only exposure they really had to speaking English or the American culture was really the normal, everyday things, like going to the grocery store. Mm-hmm. A lot of the exposure was just church.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it was just church-related. No, there was a lot of things I didn't understand. Some things were like going to school, because I only had I only had 4 months to learn English before I when I started school. Because at that time I went to preschool for 4 months before I went into kindergarten, and I did fine. I just did pretty fine. I mean, I was okay. It took me a while. But it probably took me a full year before I could really grasp the language. And they had placed me in special ed, too. Because when they first tested me to get into kindergarten, I just remember sitting there, and she was just reading things, and I was just looking at her.
Mm-hmm.
And so they put me in special ed. But now they have ESL programs now throughout the year. So they did that, and I was put in special ed for 2 years. 2 years. And I couldn't understand why I was going to school and they were speaking one language. And then I go home and we were speaking another language. So that was a lot of confusion and I didn't get help a lot on homework. Mm-hmm. The only thing my parents knew how to do was math. Because
mm-hmm.
it was more like a universal language.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think I struggled, but I just got by.
Mm-hmm.
And as the years gone by, and I always, there was a lot of cultural differences too, like affection. That was something that bothered me, but it didn't. And I don't know if it has affected me being older now. Like, for example, parents would come and pick up their kids, you know, and they hug them and they kiss them, tell them they love them, and things like that.
At school.
Yeah, at school. And so, and I always wonder why I didn't get like that, you know, just because Johnny has this and this, how come I don't have it, you know? And so I never asked. But then again, that just wasn't the way at our house either. Like, for example, things are inscribed in you that you don't even know that they're there. Like, for example, my father doesn't have to tell me that he loves me for me to know that he does.
Because
it's just one of those things. And it's also, I should know better to wash the dishes than being asked to wash them. It's like instilled in you that you know what you have to do and they shouldn't be asked.
Mm-hmm.
They shouldn't be asked of you. Things like that. And plus, my parents, my father has never told me that he loves me, but he doesn't have to say it. I already know it. It's things like that, but I miss a lot of that in childhood too. And my mother started to tell me that she loved me when I turned 18 and was going away to college. You know, I think she had got sort of somewhat Americanized.
Mm-hmm.
And so she pretty much said it, and you know, I said it back, but I still don't have that connection with my father, which is okay. You know, I can accept it because that's the way the culture was.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be odd if I just went back to see my grandmother and my mom told me that she loves me in front of her. I think that would be odd
mm-hmm.
to me, because I know it without my mom saying it,
mm-hmm.
and that she does. And I've never seen my parents being affectionate to each other. Never. Not even holding hands. You know? And that's just the way things were.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess through time I learned to accept it. I just didn't understand why they wouldn't let me do certain things. Because they were really protected. And I don't know if that's being protected because, one, I was their first child. I was the oldest child and had to be this role model.
Mm-hmm.
Or two, because I was also just a female. Or three, that was just culture.
Mm-hmm.
And they were really very, very strict with me. Very,
like what? Give me an example.
Very strict.
Like they wouldn't let you go out with boys?
No. So. I didn't even get to date until I was 18. But I didn't turn 18 until my senior year. And it was too late because I was going to college 4 months later. So it didn't. I mean, I didn't get to date. I didn't get to, I've never, there were, have been a few times I went to overnighters. My parents just didn't want, you know.
Like slumber parties with girls.
Parties. Yeah, and if I did go to a slumber party, the parents had to bring me home at midnight. That's how it was. I didn't have a curfew. Depending on what I was going to do, they set a curfew on when I was coming home.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't your curfew at 12, be home by 12.
Mm-hmm.
It was go get something to eat, go to the movies, and come right back.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't, you know, and I feel like I missed a lot on the socializing part in that
mm-hmm.
aspect. I did get to go to, like, school activities and functions because I participated, but participating was more of a downfall. Like, I ran track and cross country and stuff like that, but my parents didn't see that as that as being an advantage for any, like, school. Like, it wasn't going to get me anywhere in
mm-hmm.
school. They saw it like that, like, the extracurricular activities weren't going to take me anywhere in life. Sort of
mm-hmm.
like that, you know? I mean, I didn't become the Olympic runner or anything either, so, I mean, things like that, they just, what they couldn't see in front of them, it wasn't really, a benefit, I guess you can say.
Mm-hmm.
So they were really, really strict. But I think they focused a lot, too, just on me. And they sort of forgot. They didn't forget, but they took the focus off my brother. He was having a harder time because he was struggling. And I think also being male also put it hard on him because they were really, really strict on me, but they sort of let him, after they saw that I was going to turn out okay,
mm-hmm.
I think they just sort of like thought he was going to be the same way, but they didn't discipline us the same, because he got to date when I was 18, he got to date when he was 16
mm-hmm.
and a half, and then he was eventually going, as soon as I turned an age, he would turn it like the following
mm-hmm.
age, a couple months later. So he just now, he struggles a lot too because he's still trying to figure out where he fits in, I think. And he's very emotional and keeps everything a lot inside.
Hmm.
Because I think they should have been strict with my parents. I think they should have been fair to both of us.
Mm-hmm.
If they were going to do one way for me, they should have waited for him.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they thought that I turned out okay and
he'll be fine.
Then he'll be fine. Well, they didn't, not to say that he's messed up or anything. He's not. There's a lot of things that he has to find within himself, I guess you can say, because he feels like he didn't have any guidance or direction. So, but it's strange though, because my parents were so strict on me. And then when I went off to college, I was trying to find, like, what I should major in and stuff like that and decide. It was being so independent. No, being so dependent on the parents to tell you what to do, where to go, when to go, and when not to go, to being independent in 24 hours, it seemed like. Because once they dropped me off, And now I look back at it, and all the decisions were on me. Because every time I call her, my mom, and when I call home, it's just to talk to my mom.
Mm-hmm.
If it's to talk to my dad, because something's wrong with my car. That's all it is. And the conversations are shortened to the point, you know. They're not, mom, what are you doing, blah, 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 and she'd talk about it. No, they're pretty much simple. Shortened, simple, to the point.
Like, would you call her for advice about things?
No, because that was another thing too. When I went off to college, it was like I got all this freedom that I would have never expected to get. Like, I'd ask her, you know, well, what should I major in? And all my mother would ever say was, it's up to you because it's your life. And that's all she has ever said to me ever since then.
Ever since she left the house, all of a sudden.
Yeah, ever since I left the house, all of a sudden, all this independency. And it has affected me because I'm so, like, indecisive.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to be because I'm, like, I'm waiting for somebody's approval.
Somebody to tell you
what
to do. Yeah,
and so I think that was a big factor. That I went from totally dependent to, like, mm-hmm. independent. And, but now I just call, and it's just like, mom, I'm going on a trip, you know. So if you call, that's why I'm not here. Things like that. And she's, you know, and that's okay.
Do you feel like you're close with your parents?
I feel like I'm closer now than I ever was when I was younger. And I don't know why that is. It's strange because my parents do stranger things now that I never thought that they would have done when I was younger. For example, we had never, ever went to a public restaurant before I went to college. Never. Went to McDonald's drive-thru, came right back home. I mean, we never did. Never went to a public restaurant together as a family.
Do you know why?
I don't know why. I think sometimes when I analyze it, it's because once you make a mark in your life, like, it's like graduating from high school, once you make that mark, then it's like, how do I explain it? Once I hit that mark, like, to adulthood, to do something that is actually going to start my life off, I think starting college was important for them. Then they felt like, we can take her out because she is an adult now. It's like that. It's weird. It's like, when I came home my first year in college, my parents took just me out to eat. And I don't know whether that would be because my brother wasn't around, he was working too much. They just took me out to eat. And I was surprised because we went out to eat. And, you know, we talked and stuff like that. But they had never did that before.
So had they gone together to a public restaurant?
No. They never did. I think it's because now they categorize me as an adult. So we can do, quote, adult things together. And not so much child-adult. You know?
But they hadn't gone just the two of them.
No, never. They still don't. No.
I mean, is there some cultural thing that prevents them from going to public restaurants?
I don't know.
I mean, is it culturally specific to Laos?
We lived in a small village, from what my parents said. It's a small village, remote, and all it is farmland.
Mm-hmm.
And so the village was close-knit and family was big, mm-hmm. and I don't think going to a public restaurant, there wasn't really many public restaurants you could go to.
Yeah.
So it was pretty much unfamiliar territory, and I think my parents have never, just those two, went to a public, like, American restaurant. Like, they couldn't just sit at McDonald's. I've never ever seen them just go by themselves. I mean, if they went to a Laotian
mm-hmm.
store, they would go in there and eat. I think they would, because the culture would be mm-hmm. in there anyways. But they just, I think they feel uncomfortable still, to a certain extent. Stuff like, it's just strange. And then when my brother started college, he ended up going out to eat with us a lot too, but it just never happened until I started college.
Until you guys were in college. Yeah. That's really curious.
It's neat, and it's like that, because I think they think that now we can have adult conversations instead mm-hmm. of the adult-child conversation. It's just weird.
So do you feel like your parents kind of treat you as a friend now instead of a child?
They treat me more like a friend now. And they can actually talk to me on a level where before, they didn't really talk to me. It was always authority.
Mm-hmm.
It was always an authority figure. Now mm-hmm. it's more like friend, friend.
Best friend.
Yeah.
Well, that's probably why you feel closer to them now.
That's probably why.
Side two of an interview with Noi.
Bori Boon.
Bori Boon. Okay, so your parents moved recently.
Yeah, to Valparaiso.
To Valparaiso, Indiana.
Uh-huh.
And your brother is still in Chesterton.
Yeah.
Why did your parents move? Was it this year?
Yeah, it was just this year because they had moved because the church was going to build a retirement community. And they didn't want to be in the center of the retirement community. On that
so,
land.
But your father still works at the same church, so he commutes now.
He commutes now instead of just walking. He commutes now, yeah. So he commutes, and my brother.
So it's close, like a few minutes away.
Yeah, it's about 6 miles.
Oh, okay.
So it's not far. But my brother, he's a little bit different story than mine. Mine, I learned to accept things and just go on with it, you know, and not try to. I mean, I try to analyze him, but more in a positive view. He has a lot of, I think he feels like he's oppressed. Like he's missed, like earlier I said that he's missed out on things. And he's so very much Americanized. So very, very much. Once my parents sort of saw that I was going to be okay, they just let him do anything and hopefully he was going to turn out okay.
But what do you mean? I mean, you seem really Americanized to me.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got your Adidas t-shirt on, you know.
Yeah.
What do you mean by?
I'm very Americanized, but I sort of still have, like, cultural values and morals that were instilled by my parents.
Mm-hmm.
Whether, if it was derived from the Buddhist or Christianity religion, I still speak the language at home, too. But I do have an accent, too, when I switch. So I have an accent too, and I speak the language. I can cook the meals, and I still eat the meals, you know. And I do the family thing with my parents. Mm-hmm. My brother, on the other hand, he only speaks English to them. He has a child out of wedlock. He lives with his girlfriend, and so everything he has switched. Pretty much, it's not that he wants to deny that he has another culture, is that he's so much instilled in one culture, he wants to stay put.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to stay in this culture.
Is that really hard for your parents?
Yes, it is, because in our culture, saving face and family name is very, very important. And I think that's a big difference between the American culture. I've noticed that too, is that when somebody makes a mistake or does something illegal or something that is going to disgrace their face. Like, for example, if a person got married or had a child out of wedlock and people would look at that person, those people, as doing something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But in our culture, you see it as going back to the parents.
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't the parents teach that child?
Mm-hmm.
What was right and what was wrong. Like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. It's more individualization here.
Mm-hmm.
But there, it's not. It's a whole culture. It's a family. For example, whatever I do or my brother does that's immoral,
mm-hmm.
to the eyes of people,
mm-hmm.
then it reflects back on my parents.
Mm-hmm.
That's how they take it. It's not. My brother's name is Anchon.
Mm-hmm.
It's not Anton and Noi did something wrong. They look it back and say,
family.
Why didn't their parents teach them any better? So it's a lot of saving. It's a lot of saving face. And the family name is very, very important. And I think that's a big aspect that is the difference between the American culture and our culture.
So do you feel like your parents are embarrassed about your brother mm-hmm. in a lot of ways?
Yeah, I feel like my parents are embarrassed in a lot of ways because now people are going to look at them, especially of our culture, look at them and say, why didn't
you
they
mean other Laotians?
Yeah, other Laotians.
Look at your family. And
yeah, and say, why didn't they know any better? Things like that. So it's not that Anton did something wrong. It's the mom and dad family. Did something wrong that didn't help prevent this.
Right.
That's the way that it's viewed. And I think it's interesting because here you get the person who actually does the sin or crime gets ridiculed.
Mm-hmm.
But for them, it's the family, the parents that goes back to the parents.
Mm-hmm.
It's just interesting.
So what does your mom do now?
She doesn't work. She's not.
She's at home.
She's at home. She still has back problems. She
back
has
back problems. And your dad still works every day as a
maintenance man.
And so you went to college in Indiana. Mm-hmm. At what school was that?
I went to Vincennes University for 2 years. That's in Vincennes, Indiana.
Uh-huh.
And then I came to Western for the last 3 years.
3 years.
I took 5 years.
And you just finished?
Mm-hmm. Last May. Not this past May, but May of 98.
I just May finished. Of 98. So. And what was your degree?
It was in special ed and elementary ed. So.
How did you finally come to choose that without your mother's guidance?
Actually, I think I'm still in limbo because
you've graduated. You've majored.
I graduated and majored, but I'm still like I'm still indecisive because I feel like I didn't get a lot of guidance to like pick and choose sometimes. Like for example, we had in our high school. It was sort of advanced because we had career counselors. We had electives that could gear you into something that you like.
Mm-hmm.
My parents always wanted me to be the nurse or the doctor, so mm-hmm. of course I had to take all these chemistry and biology, which I was really just average in, chemistry or biology, and all those medical classes, anatomy classes. And then didn't do me any good because I didn't like them.
Mm-hmm.
And so once I got to college, and then they, it's not that they couldn't tell me what to do, they didn't tell me what I should major in. Then I had a hard time because I was like, okay, well, now what? Well, I mean, I always liked working with kids,
mm-hmm.
but so I picked the teaching field because the only thing I saw that you could do was just be a teacher because you want to work with kids.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I look it back and know what I know now, somebody else could have said, you know, you could still work with kids and not have to be a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that I lack that in a way. But I mean, I still like kids.
So what I'm hearing you say is that you really wanted your parents' guidance.
I sort of,
during college.
Yeah, during, because.
Or at least somebody's guidance.
Yeah, somebody's guidance, because I felt like I wasn't exposed to other things.
Yeah, so you were kind of making decisions in the dark.
Yeah.
You're not perfectly satisfied with the decisions that
right.
you've made,
uh-huh.
but you've already invested 5 years
yeah.
in this degree.
So I might as well just
yeah.
stick with it until something else comes along.
I heard you say that you're planning on a master's program,
mm-hmm.
perhaps.
Perhaps.
What would that?
I think I would like to do something like student affairs. Student affairs and maybe recreation. I also thought about maybe school counseling.
Mm-hmm.
So that might be a little bit, it's still in a school atmosphere, working with kids,
mm-hmm.
just in a different field, things like that.
So are you working right now?
Yes, I'm finishing. This is my last week with AmeriCorps program.
AmeriCorps.
Mm-hmm. It's just like it's AmeriCorps Slice Kentucky Reads. And SLICE stands for Service Learning Impacting Children's Education.
Okay.
That's what the little lingo is, the logo is. And
haven't you been doing this for a whole year?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We do it for, it's a year contract,
mm-hmm.
and it's about ready to end this week. About ready to end, and then hopefully I'll be able to teach in August. I applied to teach.
Yeah, I was going to say, have you put in applications and done interviews
mm-hmm.
and stuff?
I applied to teach, I did some interviews, and now I'm just waiting for somebody to say, hey,
you
hired
here.
So I'm doing that, and I'll probably go to school part-time this fall. And I'm
on a master's, working on a master's.
Yeah, and I have not became an American citizen yet. No.
Are you serious?
Yeah, my parents have. My parents are American citizens. And so is my brother. My brother is. I think procrastinated, but I don't see why. I have a green card that will give me a life here, you know? And I really don't understand the concept of letting me be in the military and not being a citizen.
You're right, I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah, I'm going on...
How funny.
I'm going on 7.5 years with the military.
You've been in the National Guard for 7.5 years. How old are you? 24?
24, yeah. I came in at 17. I went in at 17.
That's hilarious. And you're not even an official citizen.
No, that's with my green card. It's not funny. So, every single piece of paper I have to fill out for anything has to have an alien card.
Yeah.
No one has it, you know? Yeah. But, I mean, it's just strange.
But are you planning on becoming a...
Yeah, I'm planning to become an American citizen. It's just that I think it's sort of ridiculous that I have to pay almost $300 to take a test that the average American on the street wouldn't know. I mean, the test is really detailed.
Like what?
Like, what do the 13 stars and stripes on a flag stand for? What are
You're kidding.
Yeah, what are the 13 colonies? Who's the fifth president?
You're kidding.
Yeah, things like that. But they give you a packet that you have to study. There's like maybe 200 questions that are possibles.
Uh-huh.
And then there's an oral part and then there's a written part.
Uh-huh.
And there's an oral and a written. And the oral part is they just want you to read like 3 sentences to make sure your English is somewhat.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can read somewhat English. And then the written part is they have like 25 questions out of the 200 in the pack that you just, multiple choice.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have one sentence you need to write. One sentence. And my mother had failed it once. She's failed it once. She can get American citizenship through my father, but I think she's determined to get it by herself.
Mm-hmm.
And she forgot to cross the T in president. And so she didn't get it.
She failed because she'd forgotten to cross
the T in presidents.
On her sentence.
Yeah. Bill Clinton is the president of the United States. She forgot the T in states. One of the T's in states.
They're that picky?
Yeah.
She failed the test because...
Yeah. So.
Oh, my word.
And it's a long process. You send in your information, and you have to, depending on where you claim residency, that's where, like here, if you live in Kentucky, you go to Louisville for this region. If it was in Bowling Green, I'd go to Louisville, but you have to go like 3 times. First time would be fingerprint.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be fingerprints to take the test, and then if you pass the test, to swear in, you go back to swear in. So it's a whole year long procedure. And I think there's so many people who want to get their citizenship that it takes them that long.
Well, that is kind of ridiculous. I mean, just that you've lived here for 20 years and, you know.
I've never needed to be a citizen.
Yeah.
And I never think about it, but I can't do anything like, I couldn't do the Peace Corps because I had to be an American citizen.
Mm-hmm.
So I couldn't do anything that was a grant funded out of the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
Research projects or anything like that because of that. And I think I need to do that soon. But... I know, it's funny. It's funny in a way because you think of all the things that I surpassed and then, oh, you're not a citizen. You know, my English is good.
Your English is perfect.
And so...
And just the fact that you've been in the National Guard, that's just...
Isn't that crazy?
that's wild. So, when your parents came here, did you feel like... Or do you think that your parents think... that they were making a big sacrifice choose to leave their homeland?
I think that they do, and they have felt it. They have, and I think they still do, because they have made adjustments to live here.
Yeah.
You know? It's a big step, and I think my mother tells me this too, if they absolutely knew that my brother and I were going to be okay, I think they'd go back.
Yeah.
It really would, because they miss out on a lot that's happened over there.
Mm-hmm.
And they still know the culture, because they were in their mid-20s when they came here. They were in their mid-20s when they first came here. So, and they miss out on a lot.
So, do you think that your parents think that they came for your sake? I mean, for you and your brother? like to provide you with a good life.
I think
somewhere else that's not in a war country, but you know.
I think that I don't think my father really had a choice, and I'm honestly, I think he did it for the whole family and not just for the kids' sake. Yeah, because if he can do it again, he'd probably keep us back there. But no, I think he did it for the family, knowing how it was over there, and I don't think he could have convinced anybody else to come over. I think that's why we didn't have more family come over, because we don't have any. My parents have a huge family. My dad is like, he has 8 brothers and sisters.
Mm-hmm.
My mom has 5 brothers and sisters.
Mm-hmm.
And none of them came except my one aunt who had already been in the refugee camp. And so I think my father made the decision to come here for the family and not so much looking out for his children, but I think the whole family. And I think he saw it as a benefit because you really couldn't do much more than fish or farm. My mom only baked goods for the local market, so. And
so he recognized that there were a lot more opportunities.
Somewhere
else.
Yeah, somewhere.
Europe, or.
Yeah. And so,
In a place that was, first, not being destroyed by war, and second, had some kind of industrial foundation.
To make something out of yourself. I think he thought that was the way to go. I don't know. Sometimes I wonder how it would have been if we never came.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the choices that we had.
Mm-hmm.
And it's strange because when people here in the U.S., it's a big issue when students or our kids go through that teenage year, like adolescence. Well, so much on culture over there is everybody does the same thing, so you don't have those choices. And I think that that's what's unique about it, because here teenagers have all these choices whether or not to do this, this, and this. Over there, you don't have a choice. You all do it, and it's parallel.
Mm-hmm.
Where here, you got all these little roads that you can take on a journey to adulthood or whatever, the adolescence, you know. The hormonal changes and stuff like that, there you don't have it. I mean, I'm sure you might have it, but everything's on the same guidelines. You go in the same parallel. Here you got all these little branches like a tree.
Mm-hmm.
There you just got straight roads. And my parents my parents were arranged in marriage. Yeah, they were arranged. And they are third cousins by marriage. They are that, and they're holding up fine. They're holding up fine, you know. So, I think that's pretty much it. But, they're not really pressured by society very much. They are to a certain extent, like how my father feels about obligation.
Mm-hmm.
So, they are. But the other pressures are trying to compete for having the best house, or they're not really concerned
about that.
No, they're not really into that.
Well, how do you feel about all of that? I mean, you said that sometimes you think about how life would have been had you not moved.
Mm-hmm.
But what's your feeling? I mean, do you feel like you've had a fairly happy life, and you feel like you've got a, you know, bright future, and you're kind of happy about where you're going in general?
I think sometimes I wish I would have maybe been there. Wish I could have stayed there longer to know a little bit more about. I mean, I know how the culture is and what I know in my own close-knit family, you know, but I wish I would have learned to read the language. I don't know how to read the language, but I speak it. And so I think that was one of the things. And I also, I don't know how to say it. I lost my train of thought. I just wish I would have been able to know a lot more history and background so that way I can tell my kids. Because I'm afraid if I do have kids, and that I won't be able to explain everything that they want to know. So.
Everything that they might want to know about their heritage and their cultural roots.
Mm-hmm. So I think that was the point. So I wish that I would have known just a little bit more. Not so much what I see, but I wish that I could have saw the whole picture. Mm-hmm. And I haven't been back to see my grandparents since I've been here. Just because it's sort of hard when you work a college schedule sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And my parents went back for the first time like 3 years ago. Three years ago, and so they had a good time. Sort of hard to put in 6 weeks somewhere. They went for 6 weeks. So.
Well, when you have 8 brothers and sisters,
yeah.
You gotta visit all of them.
Yeah. But they're all still there in the same about area.
Great.
So, the country's still the same. They said it's still third world, mm-hmm. You know, and the cash crop is just rice.
Mm-hmm.
And they make do, and it's still poor. And I think it is still communist.
Mm-hmm. So, but do you feel happy to be in the United States?
Oh, I feel happy because of what I think. I don't know any better, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know any better, so I don't.
Yeah.
Really know, not what it feels like. I think I'm the type of person who just has to take it in a positive sense, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't change things in the past. It's gonna only make better ones, you know, in the future. So.
Good night. Yeah.